Welcome to Your Financial Choices. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Sieber is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments, Inc., member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney. Welcome to the show, folks. You are listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Sieber. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, and podcasts of prior shows are available there as well under local programming. Today is February 14th, 2018. Happy Valentine's Day. When I was planning for the show, I didn't even realize it was Valentine's. I get so into tax season, I kind of forget about everything else. So my apologies to my husband and my family, but happy Valentine's, folks. Hope you're enjoying the day, or Galentine's, as Ashley Strange said, I think this morning or yesterday morning. Happy Galentine's. The markets were up today, the Dow closing at 24,893, which I think was the same that we had last week. The NASDAQ at 71.43 and the S&P at 26.98. Our topic tonight is the new world of planning with tax reform. If we can do that, I'm going to just, you know, highlight a few things here and there. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio, and she will answer your calls, take your information. And if you talk live on air with me, we ask you to mute the radio so you can hear me without the delay, and we can talk without confusion. And if you are not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori and she'll bring it into the studio, and then I'll do my best to answer the question. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So let's do some, you know, some kind of highlights. I'm really almost just going to talk a little bit off the top of my head tonight. I am very busy, so don't have like a very detailed outline. And in fact, if you have questions about, you know, taxes, you're welcome to call in as well. Next week, I am going to dedicate the show to tax questions. So next week, the show will be your listeners' tax questions. So if you don't have them tonight, get started on your taxes, and then you can call in next week if you have any questions, and I'll see if I can kind of help you navigate whatever it is you're trying to get through. But why I thought it would be important to talk about tax reform and how we can plan around it kind of early in the tax season is because as you're going to do your tax return for 2017, that is the time you want to review what your 2018 income and income tax return is going to look like, because you want to make sure that you are going to have your income tax obligation or liability covered for 2018 because of so many changes. We're not exactly sure how this will all wash through when you have employees and wages from the new tax tables versus the old tax tables. And did you used to cover maybe some of your investment income with your withholdings through your employer? I mean, so many little decisions go in making sure that we cover our taxes, because as you should know, if you're a regular listener, it is a pay-as-you-go system. The IRS says we have to kind of pay our income taxes as we earn that money. They give us a few ways to estimate that if we're not ever sure, but the idea is it's a pay-as-you-go system. So we want to make sure that you've got your taxes covered so that you don't owe any penalties or get notices from the IRS. So we try to watch for that. But it's more than just that for me. It's more than just figuring out how to cover the taxes. It's more about what can you do now to plan and get the best planning for yourself for 2018. So we'll talk about a few things that are going to be changing and how that might impact those of you who are filing. Generally, the idea is that people are supposed to save a little bit on their taxes under tax reform because they changed tax brackets. You know, they lowered the tax rates and things like that. But not everybody's going to be saving. Some people are going to owe more. It just kind of depends. So I'm going to kind of go through a few things. So again, before I get started here, if you do have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. So you can talk live on air with me or off air. So the tax reform that went through, which I just call tax reform because for me it's easier to say than the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. So the tax reform, I want to remind everyone, is just temporary for the most part. So some little pieces were made permanent, more along the lines of corporate taxes, but temporary for the most part through 2025. So we know it's going to, what we have now is what we're going to see for several years. And I would imagine that if there were going to be any changes, they might be modifications to what we're currently seeing. And that might be over, you know, the next several years, or maybe not until 2025. We've been here before where we had sunset provisions and then they were, you know, Band-Aid them and extending them and all kinds of crazy things. So we hope that doesn't happen again because that was a bit of a nightmare back when. So let's talk about 2018. First, I also want to mention some traditional ways of planning still apply. So, you know, if you're working, you may have decent income, you have extra cash flow, traditional planning still applies around saving for retirement, making sure that if you have an employer plan at work, that you're at least putting in enough money to get a match if the employer is putting in money for you. So you want to make sure you get the match. If you still have extra money and you can do a Roth IRA, you're within the income limits, that's still always a good idea. And if you still have even more money, then you could always still do more deferral through your 401k. So still look at funding retirement accounts, 401ks, IRAs, flexible spending accounts when you're working. So there's still a lot of planning that still applies. We had a call come in from Rebecca off air. And her question was, how investment properties will be affected with the new tax laws? So, Rebecca, I think what you're referring to when you're talking about investment properties is the there were some provisions that were impacted. They call it pass-through income benefits. It's not a tax credit. It's a line item adjustment for people with qualified business income. And what did they call qualified business income? Pass-through income. And I think there might be some confusion about what that will apply to. Investment properties, I believe what you're referring to are probably rental properties, you know, rental buildings and things like that. And when there was all this talk about this reform and who's going to benefit from it, and they talked about pass-through entities, one of the entities they said was, oh, landlords and people with rental properties are going to benefit from this. But I don't believe it's going to apply in the traditional sense where you as an individual own a rental property. We are talking about, when we're talking about pass-through entities, could be partnerships, S-corps, sole proprietors, business owners, that type of pass-through activity we're looking at. And there are entities, partnerships, that have in rental properties. So I think if you're just owning, you know, a house on the corner, I don't think that pass-through entity is going to pass through to you. There are some changes in depreciation that you might be able to take advantage of. But for the most part, I think that's what you're talking about. So we'd have to see if there's going to be changes on that. What that does point to, though, Rebecca, is that because of that tax reform allowance with the qualified business income, what we are going to see is more and more folks who have certain maybe investment properties or business income, sole proprietor income, or partnerships. We're going to see more of these business entities reevaluating how they're structured, such that if they change their structure, would they then qualify for some of these pass-through credits, etc. All right, so I think that might be where you were going with that. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We can take questions live on air or off air. And we are talking about tax reform and planning for it. And we will take your calls or continue our discussion when we get back from this next break. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY is throwing a party, and you're invited. Join us for a night of live music, food, drinks, and fun as we celebrate WDIY's 23 years in the Lehigh Valley, featuring a performance from the Valley's own roots rock and roll band, Tavern Tan, Saturday, March 3rd at the Ice House in Bethlehem. Get your tickets today at WDIY.org. We'll see you there.
Welcome back to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and we are talking a little bit about the tax reform, Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, and just a few little highlights of it to kind of get us thinking, and especially when we're doing our 2017 taxes, what might impact you that you want to make sure that you're looking at 2018 and how you might be able to plan for some of the tax reform enhancements, I'll call that, when you're working on your tax return. So as I mentioned, still do some of the traditional planning, the 401ks, IRAs, flexible spending accounts. Where I see the probably more people talking about the tax reform and how it's impacting them is more around, like for the general population, is more around itemizing deductions, which is Schedule A. So the IRS lets us take one of two deductions typically, and that is a standard deduction, which is just a flat amount. We don't have to list any of our, you know, real estate taxes or state and local taxes or charitable giving or mortgage interest. We can take a standard deduction, or if we think itemizing those deductions are higher, we could do itemized deductions, Schedule A. So it's a little bit more involved and requires a little bit more homework for those people. And Schedule A would give you the opportunity to deduct certain expenses, of which sometimes you don't always get all of them. So medical expenses, sometimes there's a limitation. You have to be over a certain threshold. Well, if you're not over it, then you don't get the medical deduction. Then we have real estate taxes, state and local taxes we pay on our earnings. And then we have mortgage interest, we have charitable contributions, and then there's something called miscellaneous itemized deductions. And traditionally, what would happen with that Schedule A, depending on how much money we made, those limitations could wipe out some of those deductions, like the medical expenses or the miscellaneous itemized deductions. Because if our income is over, you know, X number of dollars times these limitations, we might not have been able to deduct some of those itemized deductions, medical and miscellaneous being the big two. The other thing that would happen is we also had something called alternative minimum tax. And to the extent you were subject to something called alternative minimum tax, you also might not have benefited from the tax deductions you were getting, the real estate taxes or the state and local taxes. So, you know, just because your itemized deductions might be higher than your standard deduction didn't always mean that you were really getting the full benefit of them. So because of all these limitations, because alternative minimum tax would disallow so many of these expenses, sometimes we didn't get the full deduction. Well, now what's going to happen in 2018 is they have doubled the standard, or they've doubled the standard deduction. So for married filing joint, it went from about 12,000 to 24,000. What they also did is they said, no more miscellaneous itemized deductions. That might have been your investment expenses on your brokerage accounts, tax preparation fees, non-reimbursed employee business expenses. Union dues, publications, safe deposit boxes. Those are miscellaneous deductions. So they took those away. Boom, 2018, those are gone. No more limitations. They're just gone. Medical deductions, which we were originally told by the House that they were going to go away completely. Well, they didn't go away. And in fact, for 2017, they lowered the threshold on the limitation to 7.5%. So for people who have high medical expenses, there's this limitation, which was going to be 10% of your page one income. So you could only deduct anything over 10% of your page one income if you itemized. So many doors to get through. But then they changed it to 7.5%. So for folks who thought, well, I'm not going to be able to itemize, I'm not going to be over 10%, maybe now you actually would get some medical deductions because they've lowered it to 7.5%. So we thought that was going away. It is still here. It's going to be 7.5% for 2017 and 2018. I believe it goes back to 10% after that, but it's better than them taking it away completely. Then the state and local tax and real estate taxes, they've capped at $10,000. Now, what's interesting about this is single people have the $10,000 cap. And guess what? Married people have a $10,000 cap. So now you have two single people who are thinking about getting married. They're going to lose $10,000 of deductions if they otherwise would have itemized and got those. So something to think about for your tax planning. I don't know if I would hold off getting married, especially on Valentine's when people are probably getting engaged. But the Schedule A itemized deductions have now capped out the taxes to 10. We might not get the medical because we might be over the limitation. Mortgage interest, they're capping that, but, to $750,000 mortgage, which is still a big amount of mortgage interest deduction. But for the general public, you might have someone who has a $50,000 mortgage or a home equity line of credit. You might, maybe $10,000 of mortgage interest. So in this example, we got $10,000 of mortgage interest, $10,000 of taxes, maybe $4,000 of charitable contributions. Your Schedule A totals up to $24,000. Well, guess what? Your standard deduction is $24,000. So you're no better off doing this, itemizing than the standard deduction. But guess what we don't get? We don't get exemptions anymore. So where you might have thought, in 2017, I had $24,000 Schedule A, and in 2018, I'm going to have $24,000 Schedule A, I'm good to go, it's a wash. That's not necessarily so, because it's the standard deduction and the itemized deductions might be the same, but in 2017, we also had exemptions. So for each person on your tax return, husband, wife, I'm going to use for simple numbers, $4,000 each, that's $8,000 deduction. Maybe you had two kids, that was another $8,000, $16,000 plus your 24 equals 40, and yet you only get the standard deduction, no exemptions now. So there could be a big change there. Now, they tried to put a Band-Aid on that, meaning if they were taking away the exemptions, and for those people who had children and had a boatload of kids maybe in the house and benefited from all those little exemptions, they did raise the child tax credit such that the hope is the higher child tax credit will offset the loss of the exemption. So when you are looking at your 27 tax return, you're looking at your Schedule A deductions, you're looking at your exemptions, do you have kids? Did you qualify for child tax credits? Child tax credits applied for children under age 17, I believe. So for under age 17 child tax credit, at least that's what it is going to be for 2018. But the child tax credit was $1,400, and it was available married filing joint on $110,000 of income, $75,000 for single. Well, guess what? That is one of the big, big changes that in tax reform that we saw, that for the child tax credit, they significantly raised the thresholds for taking children for exemptions. This is complicated stuff, but I want to explain when we come back from this next break that there's going to be a whole slew of people who did not benefit from having kids because their income was too high or they had alternative minimum tax, a whole slew of people who did not qualify for child tax credits that might qualify now. So you want to know about that for your tax planning for 2018. Folks, on this Valentine's Day, if you're listening to the radio show, instead of out to dinner or having a nice romantic night with your loved ones, we are here for you. You can ask questions. We're live or off air, whatever you're more comfortable. The number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me or off air. Just if you talk live on air, we want you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay. And if you don't want to talk live on air, just give your question to Lori C. She's answering the phones tonight at 610-758-8810. So let me see, because I could talk about a million things, so I'm trying to stay focused here. Let me kind of close the loop on this child tax credit. So as I mentioned, there was an income phase out in the past for folks to be eligible for the child tax credit. And those phase outs were at $75,000 for individuals and $110,000 for married couples. They have expanded those thresholds to $200,000 for individuals and $400,000 for married couples. Now, there is a note here that the thresholds are not indexed for inflation. So those are some numbers I actually might be able to remember from year to year. So in 2018, the income threshold to be eligible for the child tax credit of $2,000 is $200,000 for individuals and $400,000 for married couples. So let me just throw out a real quick example. Let's say someone was making $350,000 last year. Well, they would have phased out of the exemption and they would have phased out of the child tax credit. And now that with the expansion of this threshold amount, now you're going to see a lot of people who weren't benefiting from the exemption or who weren't getting the child tax credit are now going to get this child tax credit. This is a tax credit. The importance of a tax credit cannot be, you know, downplayed. A tax credit is a dollar for dollar savings against your taxes. So when we talk about planning for 2018, it's not just for those people who are in this range, 200,000 single, 400,000 married, filing joint, but it's also for people who are maybe making, you know, $100,000 or $80,000, because you might be able to wipe out a lot of your taxes depending on how many kids you have. And if you do that and you're not going to maybe benefit from doing pre-tax, you know, contributions into a retirement account, maybe you could instead do Roth contributions or Roth IRAs. So you see, if you're going to wipe out your tax anyway, maybe you don't need those kind of pre-tax contributions to retirement plans like we traditionally might use to lower our income tax. So many pieces, you guys. There's so many pieces that kind of fit together that it's overwhelming how you have to kind of understand all of this. The other note on that is the child tax credit is going to have a refundable portion so that if, let's pretend the child tax credit would ordinarily be $2,000 for one kid, and let's pretend your tax was only $400. Well, it will first offset that $400 that you owed, wipes out your income tax, and you just lost the benefit of $1,600 of tax credit. But wait, no, they say up to $1,400 of it is also refundable. So in that little story, we said the tax was $400. There's a $2,000 credit. There's $400. That's $2,000, $1,600 more of the credit that we would have available. Only $1,400 is refundable. The other $200 you just lose. So when we're looking at planning, we don't want anybody to lose those child tax credits. So we want to look to see what income is on your return. Maybe you don't need the deductible IRA. Maybe you don't need the pre-tax contributions to a 401k because you're going to have these tax credits that are going to help offset your taxes. But we still want you to save for retirement. So maybe you just need to do it instead of on a pre-tax basis. You want to do it on an after-tax basis using something like a Roth. So these are just kind of the planning ideas. Remember, this is general information. I'm not giving specific advice to any one particular listener. It's general, and you kind of need to work this through with your own advisors. But I'm just raising the flag for how planning is going to change for 2018, because we're going to have a lot more people qualifying for this child tax credit, and we want to take full advantage of it. So again, maybe it would be if you have a retirement account and maybe you're not making contributions on a pre-tax basis, but you still have some of this extra credit. Maybe you need to look at, should you do a conversion of some money from an IRA to a Roth? You could do, you know, $5,000 or $6,000, whatever it might take to kind of tweak that. But that's, you can only do those conversions trying to plan for this planning in this year, because for 2018, you have to do the conversion in 2018. You can't decide to do a conversion, you know, in early 2019 for 2018. Some people get confused about that because they're so used to understanding that you can fund IRAs and Roth IRAs up until April 15th of the year following. So we have folks who are still waiting to find out that magic number of how much should they fund their IRA or their Roth IRA up until April 15th for 2017. Because sometimes how much you can fund those accounts depends on how much income's on your return for 2017. So don't confuse that for the period of time you have to do a conversion. Now, that was something else that happened in tax reform that I want to mention. In the past, when folks did convert money from an IRA to a Roth IRA, and what that means is you decide to take money out of the IRA and push it directly into a Roth, and if you did that, you'd pay tax on it. So it's not really a distribution. We're just transferring it from the IRA to the Roth. Because we didn't pay tax on the IRA monies when we put it in, we have to pay tax on it coming out. So sometimes we like to do that if we're in a really low tax bracket. Maybe we're playing tax brackets, so we move a little bit of the IRA money right into a Roth, and we're going to pay tax on it. And then it continues to grow in the Roth IRA income tax-free. So that's one little strategy for, you know, saving and planning. And what made that really attractive is that we could do that and then change our mind, because the IRS would let us change our mind about that decision up until the filing of the tax return or the extended due date. So we have until October 15th of 2018 to change our mind about a Roth IRA conversion that we did in 2017. Pretty awesome. So if the market were to tank between now and October 15th, and we decide, gosh, that $100,000 conversion we did, not such a good idea anymore, I want to change my mind, we could. But tax reform took that opportunity away. So going forward, if you do a conversion in 2018, you're not going to be able to change your mind. So while we're talking about, are there opportunities to look at converting monies to Roth IRAs if we're going to pay no tax or little tax or low tax, just know that you may not be able to change your mind if you do it. So planning can be really fun. I hope it's not too complicated that I'm trying to explain to folks. It's basically awareness, a little bit of education. I'm throwing a lot at you tonight, so I hope that for those who are listening tonight that you can take away a few items to maybe review when you're doing your own planning. If you have questions tonight, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
This is WDIY. It's 6:30. Your current temperature is 43. Thursday is going to be high near 60. Thursday night, low around 48. Friday, high near 56. Friday night, partly cloudy with a low around 23. Saturday, partly sunny with a high near 36. And Saturday night, snow likely, mostly cloudy with a low around 27. And for your Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 46. So now back to your financial choices.
Welcome back, folks. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Another item I want to make sure I get to, because I think this is really important, and that is charitable giving. One of the concerns I've heard quite a bit about is with the tax reform, the doubling of the standard deduction, people may not benefit tax-wise from making charitable contributions anymore. All right, let's pretend you give to charity every year $5,000 and to your church or whatever it might be. You give $5,000 and you're retired. You don't have mortgage interest anymore. You don't have state and local taxes. But maybe you have real estate taxes. Maybe you do have mortgage. Maybe your deductions would normally be, I don't know, $20,000. So you benefited from itemizing your deductions. And that included $5,000 of charitable giving. Well, if now the standard deduction is $24,000, the fear is that you're not up to the amount to itemize anymore. You're going to use the standard deduction. Maybe you're not getting a tax benefit for your charitable giving. Are people going to be less inclined to charitably give if they're not getting a tax deduction? I think it's a valid concern that nonprofits and charities will have. So what we have to realize is there's so many other ways of planning around the charitable giving. So we can still come up with ways to give and get a benefit, and whereby you feel good about helping some of these organizations that are helping in our communities, and they continue to benefit as well. So I'm really, feeling for some of these organizations, but hopefully listeners and financial planners and estate planners will get together and think about all the ways that we can still continue to do some charitable giving. So one of the things that you can do, one of the things we were working with a lot of clients at the end of 2017 is that we knew that we were still going to get, the benefit of full itemizing, and we still had the lower standard deduction in 2017. So what we were looking at was talking to clients about if they had the means to front load their charitable giving. And there are a number of custodians out there that offer something called a charitable, a donor advised fund. And we've even had the Lehigh Valley Community Foundation on the show talk about donor advised funds too. So you can even do it at a local level. It doesn't have to be with one of these national custodians. But what the idea is you front load the charitable giving. So when we were able to do it in 2017, we got the full deduction in 2017. But because the contribution was made to the donor advised fund, the donor then has a bucket of money that they have received a deduction for, but that they can make a distribution to their favorite charity in subsequent years. So let's pretend you wanted to do $5,000 a year, and you knew you wanted to do this for at least 4 years. So that would be $20,000. You make the donation to the donor advised fund, and you get the deduction of $20,000 in 2017. And then they continued to make a deduction, a grant out of that donor advised fund to the charity for 4 years at $5,000. And then maybe at that time, they turn 70 and a half and they have an IRA. And now a different strategy could be implemented, whereby they take a qualified charitable distribution out of their IRA. Instead of taking a distribution out of their IRA, putting it in their bank account, writing a check to the charity, they actually ask the custodian to write the check directly to the charity out of the IRA. That is called a qualified charitable distribution. Custodian writes the check to, you know, Church A or WDIY, and they send the check to the donor, and then the donor delivers the check to the charity and gets a receipt. And then we show, hey, out of this IRA of, you know, maybe the distribution was $20,000 out of the IRA and we did $5,000 to our church. Well, then we only have to report $15,000 of taxable income on page one. So there's lots of ways we can find to do charitable giving outside of, you know, just Schedule A itemized deductions. Another way is using appreciated assets, appreciated stock. Maybe you have a big portfolio. There's a position you've had in your account forever, and you don't want to sell it because you're going to have this huge capital gain. Well, you could use some of that security to transfer to the nonprofit. If they have a brokerage account, you get that information, you sign a form, and you transfer the securities in kind to that organization, and you get a, you don't get the deduction for the charitable contribution if we're not itemizing anymore. But what you do avoid and save taxes on is selling that asset and having to pay tax on the capital gains. All right. So many different ways to give. And then there's also the concept of, as I mentioned with the donor advised fund, you could even just lump it all together in, you know, every 3 years, 4 years, 5 years now, do a big, huge contribution to the church or nonprofit, charitable organization, whatever it might be in our local community as well, and get a deduction all at once, kind of bunch them up. We have a couple questions that came in off air, so I want to make sure I try to get to these. Nancy from Allentown, thank you for calling in. Nancy asked, itemizing, can you repeat what contributions are allowed? For itemizing, when we look at Schedule A, and I'm not sure if you were talking about contributions, charitable contributions in particular, but I'm just going to go through quickly. Schedule A, when we look at itemizing, medical expenses, the limitation now is 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. So if you have any out-of-pocket medical, not pre-tax medical from our employer or FSAs or whatever, out-of-pocket medical, limitation 7.5% of your adjusted gross income, anything over that could become a deduction. And then we had real estate taxes, state and local taxes on our wages or investment income that we're paying, state taxes. We have mortgage interest, and then charitable contributions. Charitable contributions could be cash contributions. They could be appreciated securities. And the benefit of the appreciated securities is I don't have to sell it and pay the tax on the gain. I actually get the deduction if it's long-term appreciated securities. Let me clarify that. You have to have owned it more than a year. To be a long-term appreciated securities, you get the deduction at the fair market value. Then you have to fill out a special form that still flows through to Schedule A. That's the form 8283. Whenever you make a deduction of appreciated securities, and the charity has to give you a receipt for that. And then, of course, you can do your other kinds of, like, Goodwill, Salvation Army, those kind of deductions. If you do Goodwill, Salvation Army, if it's under $500, you don't have to do a special form. But if that is over $500, you have to do that same 8283 I mentioned if you donate appreciated securities. The miscellaneous itemized deductions, Nancy, that is things like the tax preparation, investment management fees on your, like, kind of joint individual accounts. Doesn't usually apply if you're taking the fees out of IRAs, and it doesn't apply if you have tax-exempt income, to the extent you have tax-exempt income. So miscellaneous itemized deductions, unreimbursed employee business expenses, things like that. I will mention, too, though, that the charitable contributions, if you're someone who thinks, well, I make, you know, $50,000 a year, but I have a big investment account, and Lori said I could, you know, front load this charitable contribution, and I want to do it in a big way. I'm going to fund a donor advised fund with $100,000. Well, there are limitations on the charitable giving as well, such that if you only make $50,000 and you're doing a cash contribution, your charitable contributions are limited to 60% of your page one income. So if you make $50,000 and 60% of that is $30,000 and you made a $100,000 donation, you're only going to get the benefit of $30,000. Okay. If you donate appreciated securities, the limitation is 30% of your page one income. So 50,000 times 30% is 15,000. You'd be limited to 15. So this is where we work with folks to coordinate when you want to do those big charitable givings with putting income on your return. Maybe we want to do, you know, a Roth conversion or something like that. So Nancy, I hope I was able to answer your question on that. Janice from Bethlehem called and asked for a brief recap on what you can take in addition to the $12,000 for small businesses. I don't recall. I didn't say anything about $12,000 for small businesses. I said individuals have a standard deduction of $12,000. Married filing joint gets a standard deduction of $24,000. Small businesses, pass-throughs, there's going to be a 20%. Maybe that's what you heard me say. There's something, it's not a deduction and it's not a tax credit. So it's kind of a below-the-line adjustment. So it's not going to lower your page one adjusted gross income. It's going to lower your, I can visualize a tax return. I know our listeners can't always visualize a tax return in front of me, but sometimes people think they get a deduction on page one. It lowers your adjusted gross income, which then the adjusted gross income impacts a bunch of other limitations. This qualified business income reduction is after page one income. And it's just lowering your income. It's not lowering your self-employment income. It's just lowering your income for tax calculations. And it's 20% qualified business income. It's complicated. It depends on what kind of business you have. And, you know, there's other limitations if you have a special service like accountant, lawyer, healthcare, things like that. So it's pretty complicated. But if you have a small business, I suggest you start working with an accountant so they can help you take full advantage of that. Shandi, we have a caller on line one. We have John from Bethlehem. John, can you hear me?
Barely. But how you doing tonight, Lori?
Hi, good. How can I help you?
Yeah, I have a question. It's really, I get the 1099 DIVs from a mutual fund.
Right.
Which I neither bought nor sold any shares this past year.
Okay.
And I go to Schedule B, and I entered a numbers from the boxes for the 1099. And it comes out to a number, the total capital gains, and it ends up on line 13 of my 1040 is taxable income.
Okay. So what happens is on your 1099, there's a number of different line items. The first line item will say ordinary dividends, and that might be your total dividends. I'm going to use a pretend example. XYZ company, or mutual fund, had $5,000 of dividends. Of that dividend, there will also be a line item for qualified dividends. So in my example, we have $5,000 of total dividends or ordinary dividends, and of that we might have 3,000 that are considered qualified. On page one of the return, the first part, you're going to see the 5,000 dividend on the main column, and 3,000 is indented for qualified dividends. But then also on that 1099, a little further down, is a capital gain distribution. The capital gain distribution relates to those mutual funds that we're buying and selling during the year. So even though you didn't buy and sell any of your mutual funds, the mutual fund company was buying and selling positions within that mutual fund. They pass that out to the shareholders via a capital gain distribution, a lot of times at year end. If you didn't have any other sales on your 1099, usually a consolidated 1099 will show interest, dividends, and sales. And if you didn't have any other sales, they have that capital gain distribution line item that passes through directly to page one. You don't have to fill out a Schedule D where we normally expect to see capital gains. It flows directly to page one, which must be, I haven't even memorized all the lines, but let's say it must be line 13. And there's usually a box that says, if you didn't have any other sales, you don't have to do Schedule D. You can just report your capital gains here. All right. So is that all making sense right now?
Yes. Now, yeah, that makes sense.
The other piece, though, is if you're penciling in your return and doing it by hand, this is very important information if you're going to the tax tables to calculate your taxes. If you're doing it by hand, you have to be really careful because the qualified dividends and the capital gain distributions are subject to the more favorable capital gains tax rates. If you're just doing it in software, it should calculate it fine and take care of it for you.
Yeah, I do use the software just for this reason.
Right.
Get around this. The other question I had was, I get this at year end. I get this the statement, and the state of Pennsylvania doesn't like the fact that I owed them $500 last year, and they want me to make quarterly payments.
Right.
But I don't get a quarterly statement from my mutual fund, and they specifically say in their instructions, don't just base it on last year's, do a real estimate. So there's really no way around that, is there?
Well, generally, if someone has a lot of investment income, then they don't have withholdings on their investment income. So generally, I would set up estimated tax payments, and generally, I do base it on the prior year. If there is some unusual event, like you didn't sell anything this year, but maybe next year you plan to sell some big position, then I might adjust the quarterly estimates. John, one other thing I want to mention, which is interesting because the qualified or the capital gain distributions we just talked about that I said, if you actually had sales in your portfolio, that capital gain distribution actually would show up on Schedule D and then gets mixed in with all your other gains and losses and then flows through to page one. In this case, it just shows up on page one, right? But guess what happens
on
Pennsylvania? In Pennsylvania, those capital gain distributions are included with your dividends. So when people try to compare their federal return to their state return, they don't always look like they match up because, the wages are different, then the capital gains are different. But in this case, capital gain distributions show up as dividends on Pennsylvania. Okay.
All right,
John.
It didn't make sense to me that it showed up on page one since I always hear about the capital gains being a lower rate.
Yep. Well, it'll still have the lower rate. It's just they don't make you do the Schedule D unless you had other sales. So good job.
Okay.
Good question.
Thanks very much.
Thanks. Have a good night. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a minute.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Okay, welcome back to the show. This is Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're going over some tax planning in light of tax reform and looking at it now for 2018, folks, while you're busy doing your 2017 tax returns. A couple other quick things. You know, I expect they're going to hopefully fix this, but the capital gains tax rates, as we just mentioned with John, there's preferential tax rates for capital gains and long-term capital gains and qualified dividends. And for 2018, those are still based on the old tables. So I don't know if they're going to like fix that, but they're based on the old tables. And the top bracket under the old tables for where the capital gains rate goes from 15% to 20% is at $425,000. But the top tax bracket now for married filing joint, I think, is like $600,000. So for people who aren't in the top tax bracket are still going to pay top capital gains tax rates if you're over 425,000 married filing joint. So just wanted to point that out. So that's kind of interesting when you're doing your planning. 529 plans, a change typically used for qualified education expenses for college. Now they expanded it to also be eligible for elementary and secondary education tuition. So for private schools, up to $10,000 per kid can be taken out of a 529, not pay any tax on it. It's considered a qualified expense. So that's a lot of things around kids seem to be in this tax reform, including kiddie tax. And a lot of kids don't walk around with a lot of investment income and investment income over $2,100. But if they do have income over $2,100, the kiddie tax for 2018 is no longer based on the parents' rates. It's based on estate and trust tax brackets. Who makes this stuff up? I don't know. I mean, really, I would have loved to have been sitting there when they were going through all of this stuff. So estate and trust tax brackets, they put them down to four. They get very high, very, very fast. At $12,500 of income, the tax rate is 37%. Where I could see that, you know, happening might be if you have a grandchild who inherits an IRA and they have to take out big amounts. Generally, if a grandchild inherits an IRA, they have a really long life expectancy, and we're not talking about very big amounts. But you never know. You just have to be aware of it. An IRA is considered investment income for inherited IRAs for children. It's part of the kiddie tax. Kiddie tax still applies in 2017 at the parents' rates. Gifting. Gift exemption went up $15,000. So many people think they can only gift that much. I want to let everybody know, if you have the means and the wherewithal and the people you want to gift to, you can gift more than $15,000. It's just that if it's $15,000 or lower that you're gifting to any one individual, you don't have to file a gift tax return. All right? That's the only reason that number's important. If you want to gift more than $15,000 to someone, then technically you need to file a gift tax return because you need to let the IRS know how much of your lifetime exemption you're eating into. Well, tax reform raised the lifetime exemption on gifting to $11.2 million per person. So if you don't gift more than $11.2 million during your lifetime, you're not going to be paying gift taxes under this current tax reform. Please note that the federal exemption amount that has gone to $11.2 million is also set to expire after 2025. So when we're looking at planning and we're looking at these new federal estate exemptions, a lot of people who you know, we can have people who have $6 million. Sometimes people have real estate, they have life insurance, they have retirement accounts. For an individual these days, it might not be as hard to get to that. And in the past, you would have had a federal estate tax to the extent you're over the about $5.5 million in 2017 rules. But in 2018, it's now 11.2. But that could come back. So what happens is now we have a whole slew of people saying, hey, if I don't have a federal estate tax anymore, maybe all of that estate planning I did to navigate around having a federal estate tax, maybe I set up a life insurance trust, life insurance to, you know, pay out to my kids so they could pay this federal estate tax. Maybe I don't need that life insurance anymore. Or maybe I don't need to gift big amounts to my kids anymore. Well, we don't know if the federal estate tax is coming back or not. So just be careful in your planning. Don't get too far ahead of yourself. But there might still be reasons to gift, to remove the appreciation from your estate. But there might be reasons maybe you don't have to gift away at the level or pace you might have been doing, you know, before tax reform. So many pieces of this tax reform. I did a piece recently with the PICPA about planning in light of tax reform, that is there some feeling that people don't need to do tax planning anymore because it's simplified, because now we just have this really big standard deduction. We're not itemizing anymore. Maybe it's so simple that we don't need to look at tax planning. There are still a lot of pieces around this tax reform that are going to require tax planning. But when we talk about tax planning in general, it is not always just about tax planning. When we look at someone's tax return, what we see could impact investment planning, could impact retirement planning, could impact estate planning. Because what we see when we're looking at a tax return, if we see a lot of interest income, that tells us that's all ordinary income. So that could be a tax planning. Maybe this person needs to, you know, review their investment strategies. Might that interest indicate that they're heavy in bonds, and maybe bonds aren't such a good place to be? These are just examples. If we look and we see that they are taking money out of IRAs at a really fast clip before they're age 70 and a half, they're not in required minimum distribution, and they're really like draining that IRA, that indicates to us maybe part of their retirement planning, they're going to have a shortfall in their cash flow. So the tax return is not always just about planning for taxes. It's about your financial planning and making sure that all the pieces of your financial life fit together. So the idea of maybe, you know, people doing things on their own, simplifying, I don't have a problem with simplifying, but what we have seen is that the more the tax code is attempting to simplify, the more complicated it actually gets. So just keep that in mind when you're looking at planning. A few other items to note when you're doing your 2017 tax return for those folks who are 65 and over, if you have Medicare, you want to manage your page one income to be under certain thresholds, because if, for example, a married filing joint couple goes over $170,000 on page one, you're going to have an income-related adjustment to your Medicare premiums. I think the Medicare premiums are about $134 a month, and that first adjustment, if you go over $170,000 by like $2, you could have an additional premium of another maybe $55. So if you and your spouse are over that threshold, and that might be another $110 a month, you might not have planned for that. And maybe there was a few things you could have done to control that income on page one. So if you see that happening in 2017, you might want to rethink what you're doing in 2018. Maybe you're taking money out of your IRA because you think, oh, I saved for my retirement, I'm going to take out of my retirement. But maybe that's not the best place to take money from if you're going to run into some of these income-related adjustments on your Medicare. I did have someone who just had mentioned, you know, that they were going in, they were applying for Medicare, and their income was over the threshold by just, you know, I don't know, $5,000. And they said, you know, Lori, I'm trying to estimate my income. What should we do? And I said, well, is there any, what can we do to lower our income going forward? But what it alerted me to is that the husband had retired, and did they realize that there was an exception to the Medicare calculation for life-changing events. So if you've retired or reduced your workload, you can go to Social Security, Medicare, and tell them, hey, you know, I'm not really planning on making that much more money. I only made that much money because I, you know, was working still and I've retired since then. So there's a special form you can do to complete to ask for an adjustment on that. You guys, so much to talk about. How long have I been doing this show? I think, let's see, we're in 2018. I've been doing this about 10 and a half years since 2009 here at WDIY. And it never seems like we run out of things to talk about. So much to say, and I am someone who likes to say it. So we want to thank you for being here. Thanks for all the calls tonight. I really love it. It's my favorite part of the show. I love when people call in. And in fact, next week, that is what we're going to do. Listeners' tax questions next week. Listeners' tax questions. So if you don't have them, I'll make some up. And we'll cover some of the things we were talking about tonight, but really we'll focus on 2017 because we want to help you get those tax returns done. So thank you, listeners. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, Shandi. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. I want to say happy Valentine's to everyone. Happy Valentine's Day to my husband and my children. Love all of you. And my family. So happy Valentine's. Hope everyone enjoys their evening. Remember, folks, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.